Welcome to This Family Life, a podcast sharing ideas and tips on how you can organise the chaos of family life. My name's Nicole Avery, and throughout the podcast, you'll hear from myself and other families and the things that they do to make family life that little bit easier. Hello and welcome to episode 13 of This Family Life. Today I interviewed a long-term reader of the blog named Mia. Mia lives in Melbourne and is working part-time as a mum to two. I personally found this interview very inspiring because Mia has really made some significant changes in her life in the last 18 months or so, and it's all really been around embracing creativity, allowing more time in her life for creativity. I have my goal this year to create space in my life for creativity and calm. So I've picked up some good tips from Mia, which you will do too. Some other things that she talks about is tips on redesigning your life. So I guess how she made the change to be able to fit in the things that she wanted to do. Tips on returning to work part-time and finding a fit that works for her and her family. And how to manage logistics of school and school holidays and drop-offs and pickups and using the community to help out there. She's got some great ideas on that one. And she used a couple of terms in the interview which I really loved, and one of them was friction points. So she talks about how she has had to focus on working out some friction points in her family, and sometimes that needs some creative solutions. And then we also talk a bit about encouraging creativity in kids. If you're interested in any of the references that Mia speaks to or the blog posts that she mentions, you can find them in the show notes, which is at planningwithkids.com/podcast. And I do highly recommend that you check out the documentary that Mia mentions. I watched it and watched it with my kids, and it is quite spectacular, really. And as she says in the interview, it gives you just amazing perspective on, family life, really, and bringing up kids in different countries and how they can all turn out pretty well with love from parents. So I think every parent could really do with watching that. And as I said, my kids really enjoyed it as well. You can also find in the show notes ways to get in contact with us there. You can contact me anytime through those means. You can use the This Family Life pod hashtag if you want to get in contact with us in social media, and you make sure you subscribe in iTunes so you keep up to date with new episodes. And now I'll get into the interview with Mia. Good morning and thanks for taking the time to be with us today, Mia. If you just love to give listeners a bit of a brief summary of you and your family, please.
Sure. I have a daughter who's 5, who just started prep this year, and I have a son who's about to turn 3. I'm married to an architect and I work in website strategy and design at a university.
Lovely. So if you'd just like to give us a bit more info about your work, what sort of hours you do, and how long you've been working there?
Yeah, sure. So I work part-time. I work 3 days per week and I work during school hours, so 9:30 till 3, which is a bit of a dream come true. And this is a relatively new job for me. I was previously working in a digital agency. So I was doing that whole working 4 days a week, trying to cram full-time hours into 4 days a week. But there was only one other senior person in the agency who had kids. It was a very young culture. Everybody was in live-to-work mode, and I burnt out. So I thought, you know, I've been doing this for 15 years. It's time for a bit of a lifestyle change. So, yeah, I recently just sort of scaled back my paid work and chose to work in this different work environment and kind of just put it out, I put it out into the universe of what I wanted to do and where I wanted to work, and just had faith that somehow this other kind of work might materialise, and lo and behold, eventually it did.
So did you resign from your job before getting your new job, did you, Mia?
Yeah, totally.
Wow, I love that.
I had a Christmas where it was Christmas holidays and I spent the whole holidays just thinking about work and thinking about the fact I was going to go back January 5 or 6 or whatever it was, and I couldn't switch off, and I was thinking, this is unhealthy and I'm kind of over it, and this is not even what I want to be doing anymore. So I had some pretty lengthy chats with my husband about finishing up my work at the next kind of work anniversary. I wanted to finish on a round number, and kind of redesigning my life so that I had more time to do some of the creative things I wanted to do and more time to spend with the kids and just generally feel less stressed out. And so just, yeah, resigned, worked towards that, saved up some money, and then just fingers crossed.
I love that.
Something else came out of the woodwork, and I was amazed at that it did. When it did, it was great.
I really love that term that you used, redesigning my life, because I know for a big chunk of my time recently, I sort of, I guess, allowed work life to dictate to me. And I think if obviously those have been reading my blog, I got to the point where I was very similarly burnt myself out. I was working, doing too much. And again, it just felt like I was going through the motions in just too many ways. And at some point you actually have to just stop and realise I do control my life. And
yes,
I do control it, but controlling that is a great right to have, but responsibility comes with that. So I had to make the responsibility to go, you know what, I'm going to have to give up that part of that work because this is too much for me, because it's not giving me what I want. And I think that I really like that term, redesigning my life, and it's a pretty courageous thing. And I think sometimes you actually, you have to put that planning in. So you did save and you got yourself to that point. And you did get that dream job. Like when you said your hours, like school hours, 3 days a week, everyone just, I think that is, it's just amazing. And obviously this is your first year with a little one in school. How have you approached school holidays with your new workload?
Yeah, so that's new territory for us. The first holidays I wasn't working, so that was pretty straightforward. These holidays, I've sort of set up a little bit of a roster with some other mums so we can share looking after our various kids on the days off. I think my daughter will be going off to a couple of days of after school care. They have a school holiday program at her school, so she might go off on an excursion. And then hopefully my husband will take a day off and we might sort of extend the long weekend in the middle of the holidays. But there's a couple of other, part-time mums, and I said, you know, would you be willing to look after my daughter and I'll look after your kid, and we kind of juggle it between the days that we have at home.
That's a fantastic idea, and I think it's one of the things that I absolutely believe that more women would like to do that, but women are often afraid to ask.
Yeah, I just – we have an email that goes out from my daughter's prep teacher, and it has everyone's email addresses, all the parents' email addresses in the email. And like week two, I was emailing parents that I knew lived near us saying, do you want to share the walk to school? Because I don't really want to walk my kid to school every day. Maybe I'll do Wednesdays and Thursdays, and if you could do Tuesdays. And people loved it. And similarly with the holidays, I did the same thing. So I just emailed some of the parents from her class that we're most familiar with and asked them, and they're like, yeah, love it. Let's do it.
That's fantastic, and I think it's also a really great way to establish relationships with people at the school, because if you are working even part-time, it can be hard to see other parents, but if you initiate things like this, it's actually a really nice way to make, I guess, a little group that you've then, a little posse that you've got there. And so your other son, he's at childcare, so obviously the extended hours is a bit more flexible. Do you do the drop-offs? You said you walk to school most mornings. Are you responsible for drop-offs and pick-ups on the days that you work?
So we're a one-car family. My husband usually rides his bike to work, so he might ride my son to daycare. If it's rainy or crappy, then we sort of have a bit of a chat about who's taking the car or how we're going to do it. But he's usually doing drop-offs. I usually do pick-ups, so I'll ride my bike to the school, collect my daughter. She might have a dance class or something. We might go and do that and then pick up my son after that, or go directly and pick up him and all come home together. So it sort of depends on who's doing what, who needs the car, what's the weather like, does my daughter have extracurricular stuff going on, but it's very much shared.
Lovely. So what advice would you give to mums who are thinking about going to back to work part-time?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. My key concerns with going back to work part-time was thinking about what days are going to work for the family, and I think it's worked best for us to spread my work days throughout the week instead of having a clump of work days. So I work Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, and one of the key considerations for that was that my son is he's one of those kids where I drop him off at daycare, or my husband does, and he just cries, he's really anxious about it. he has a lovely time once he's there, and when I pick him up, he's always had a happy day. But he just really, he doesn't like it. So I didn't want him to have huge, you know, lots of days in a row where he was at daycare. I want to spread it out a bit. So that was one thing that we had to think about when I was, you know, choosing my days. The other thing was around sharing household tasks with my husband, because there can be a tendency, if you're not working full time, you know, you might still get lumped with the bulk of the household stuff and the child admin. But, you know, you're still out of the house 3 days a week. Just because you're not 5 days a week doesn't mean you actually have time to take on everything. So you're going to kill some of those friction points, like get a cleaner, do yourself a favor, get a cleaner. You know, you might want to do online shopping or whatever it is that's going to ease some of that, those friction points. Just do it.
I wholeheartedly agree with that, and I think that as my sister we interviewed as well, and having those discussions before you go back to part-time work with your partner, yeah. I think is really, really essential, because you can go into the change of family life with different expectations. You know, you may think that, yeah, you know, you're going to go, but you're going to get more help at home, but that your partner may be thinking nothing in the world is going to change for them, which, to be honest, it quite often can be the case for men. And I know even with my husband, because I work from home, school holidays never actually comes into his calendar at all in terms of work and that sort of stuff. And what I've had to start doing recently is when I actually sort of schedule that he takes at least one day off where he can work, where he has a day off, so I can actually do some work, because I don't like to work over the holidays, but I need probably one day a week just to keep everything ticking along nicely. But one thing I've learned is I can't assume that he's going to help me out with that. He will. Yeah. He will if I ask. But again, it's that communication point which is really, really important. And you have to go in, I guess, with a clear idea of who's going to do what.
There's so much planning. I mean, that's how I found your blog. There's so much planning. So yes, you do need to sit down after dinner and get out the calendars and line and decide who's doing what and make it all work. It just has to be done. Actually, one of the other things I wanted to mention about part-time work is guilt, and encouraging people not to feel guilty to their employer because they work part-time. I've talked about this with a lot of my friends who just feel like they're not, you know, they're not in the office or not, or they're not able to contribute enough at work. But I think people need to give themselves a break and, you know, recognize that you're doing your best. I'm sure people are highly efficient when they are at work. But, you know, you can't outsource parenting. So just feel comfortable with your part-time contribution at work and don't flog yourself.
Oh, I think that's lovely advice. I think it really is, because I think guilt is something that we feel on both sides of the equation, and we don't necessarily need to. I guess at the start when you talked about making a change, creativity came up, and I know from the email interactions we've had, creativity is really important in your life. How do you work to fit it in, and I guess what are you doing that's in a creative field, and how are you doing to fit that in your work and family life?
Yeah, so I love creative writing or writing. I've always wanted to write a book. I've written some children's picture book manuscripts, and I do short stories and essays, and I haven't done any writing pretty much since my kids were born. And I had a significant birthday, and I thought, hey, guess what? I'm still not a novelist. And time is ticking, and when am I going to actually do this? So, yeah, when I did resign from my job, I did spend lots of time then writing. I managed to get the first draft of the book out. I kind of gave myself a deadline and just went for it. But the biggest change for me is stopped watching TV, and I use my evenings when the kids are asleep. And I wrote the first draft of the book. I write 3 times a week for 2 hours a week, and got that first draft done in about 5 months. And now I've got, you know, 2 hour chunks several times a week where I'm doing writing, and it is incredible how much you can get done. For me, though, it was essential that I had a job that wasn't totally stressing me out or that was leaving me so depleted that I have energy at the end of the day, so that I can still process the kids and get them to bed and have dinner and still actually have enough mental energy to do that writing. So that was So cutting TV has been a blessing.
And it's a funny thing. Like, I haven't watched TV probably for 6 or 7 years in terms of in the evening. I just don't have I just don't have the time for it because I'm choosing and it's a choice.
Like,
I don't have a problem with TV. I'm not like a TV anti-TV person. It's just that I'm choosing to go to bed earlier so I can get up earlier to exercise. And then when I'm very much like yourself, when I first started blogging, I used to blog at night because that was the only time I had the little ones around. So it was a choice that I make. And this is something that I think that it's the reality of achieving a goal is that you can't you can't do everything and you have to give up something. And you've just got to work out what it is that you're prepared to give up to gain to gain something to achieve your goal. And I love that you obviously had very much a plan to write your book. And when I wrote the Planning with Kids book, I had an incredibly short time frame. I think I met with the editor in September, signed off in October, and I had to have the manuscript in by the December. So I had this spreadsheet and I literally knew how many words a day I had to write to get it done. But the thing is, people said, oh, wow, that's really hard. I actually don't think I would have preferred it any other way because I think, you know, Parkinson's law, it would have taken as much time as I had. So just to get it in and out and done in those few months, it was full on, but I was so focused and I just knew and when I sat down to write and I had that hour, like if my husband was home, I knew I didn't have time to faff about on the internet or anything because I only had that 1 hour. And I think it's a really nice way to set yourself some boundaries and get that done. So do you find that because you've limited with your time that you're very focused in that time?
Definitely. And I think what I used to say to myself is, okay, I've got 2 hours. When I go to bed tonight, what will I feel better about doing? Will I feel better that I got all the laundry done or like the laundry hamper is empty? Or will I feel better that I got to finish 2 chapters? And I'm like, okay, right now I just need to get those chapters done. And so that's what I do. And I really thought about what I used to squeeze in. I was like, I haven't got any time to squeeze in writing. And so I wanted to reverse that thinking and instead of squeezing in writing or, you know, and it could be whatever your creative thing is, like practicing the piano or scrapbooking or whatever you're into, I was like, you know what, I'm just gonna squeeze in laundry. I'm gonna squeeze in grocery shopping.
I love that.
And kind of just reset my standards of things. So it's like, all right, I want to do the things that nourish me and reward me and I want to make time for them. And I'll squeeze in some of the boring stuff. And instead of thinking, oh, there's no fresh bed for the kids' lunchboxes tomorrow and going to the shops and suddenly losing an hour and a half in Coles, I'll be like, you know what, tomorrow they can have Kruskets and Vegemite. Like, let's just get real. They're not going to suffer. And I'll feel so much better for doing that writing instead of feeling, you know, resentful or frustrated or whatever. So, a bit of discipline there about choosing about, you know, what you want now, what you know, questioning what does really want to happen besides what you want most. So,
I completely agree with that. And I wrote a blog post called Embracing the Undone. And because when you're focusing, and I'm writing something at the moment which is taking up quite a bit of my time, and as a consequence, quite often my email inbox is really piling up. But it's actually a conscious choice because it's a bit like you. Would I rather spend an hour writing on this project or answering some emails? And yes, the emails are important and I will get there in the end, but it's about making that choice. But when you want to do everything, it can be really like easy to go, I'll just tidy this up quickly. You tidy that up quickly and get that sorted and you never get that big time chunk to do that. So when my biggest learning about focusing on one single goal is that you have to be prepared to embrace a little bit of chaos around the edges. And that's okay because you know it's only, you know, your book was 5 months and then it goes over and then you can swing back over and you might tidy things up more and you might be more organized in that area. But I think when you hear about people achieving goals, you see the end result. You don't necessarily see the messy bits along the way that, that happens. And
you didn't see me panicking as I deleted the Facebook app off my phone or deciding to get out of Instagram and thinking, oh, my God. But, you know, now I have a book. So
exactly.
That's awesome.
It is awesome. Yeah. So do you try and encourage creativity in your kids and spend time with creative pursuits with your kids as well?
Oh, definitely. I think, you know, creativity is so important for kids. It's, you know, it encourages lateral thinking and their imagination and there's certainly things that will serve them well for their whole lives. But I find kids are pretty naturally creative and a lot of the time you just got to try and not get in their way or direct their ideas. There's definitely things you can do to foster their creativity. I think one of the key things is to park your own self-doubt if you've labelled yourself or your kid uncreative. So we'll have, you know, chat with friends and be like, oh, I'm not creative, and or he won't, he doesn't, he never picks up a pencil, he's never interested in painting. You know, creativity is teachable and it comes up in so many different ways. So I think if you have a household where you're giving kids time to make a mess and you're comfortable with them making mess, if you're comfortable with them trialing and making errors instead of trying to control or direct what they're doing, then that can foster all sorts of creativity.
I think that error thing is a really important thing. My first son went to a Montessori preschool, and they have the classroom environment set up, which is what they call like self-correcting. So if they're working on anything, they should be able to work on it on their own, and they'll work out if it's wrong and be able to then self-correct and make it right. And I remember I found that a little bit challenging with my first son because, you know, first-time parent, you want it to be right. And trying to bring that into the home, and I had a parentage interview with the teacher, and she said sometimes parents just need to sit on their hands.
Yes.
And it was a really, really great tool for me because I literally metaphorically sometimes would actually sit on my hands because they'd be sitting there working with Lego or working with a puzzle and you'd want to go fix it, go, you can pop that in there. But it doesn't help them. It doesn't help them at all. And what I find is that's actually – my advice is if, you know, it works brilliantly for young kids to allow them to explore and they make mistakes, but it becomes even more important as the kids get older, because if you save them from making every single mistake or for getting stuff wrong, they don't learn. And especially when it comes to boys very much in particular learn by consequence. So they need to feel the consequences. And so they need to flex their decision-making muscle to make the right decision, see if there has a consequence or not. So starting off small and letting kids make a mess and letting them make mistakes, I think is really, really good advice, because you have to sort of do it more and more so they become capable adults, which is – but letting go is a scary thing, I think, for parents.
I literally sit on my hands. I don't metaphorically. I literally sit on my hands. Or I just have to look away. I had a friend who, she's a beautiful artist. She paints, and she would get out the paints for her son, and she couldn't stand the fact that he wouldn't rinse his brush between dipping it in the different colours. He's like 4 years old. I'm like, let it go. Don't even use that. It's just making it, oh, it's all dirty and it's mixing the colours. It doesn't matter. Look away.
And I think the other thing that happens too is that kids need to learn to be able to do stuff without always seeking approval or seeking that it's right, and allowed to explore. And what I find that I love to do the most of the time is just actually get out of their way. So sometimes I'll set up something, and if I think I'm going to have trouble managing how that's going to work, I'll simply say, oh, I'm just going to come back in a minute, and I let them go along on their own for a bit, and then they've already entrenched, and then I'm okay to come back in and say, oh, look at that. You know, I can really see what you've done with this here and that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And if it is going to be messy, and because I do – like there's some things like I'm quite good with certain mess with certain bit, but then I think, you know what, I might just set it up outside because then I don't have to have a cow over it, and I won't internally, I can feel my brow furrowing and thinking, oh my God, look at all this mess. And I'm luckily enough, my daughter, who is quite creative, and I'll say that she always wants to do certain grandiose things on the weekend. And I'll say to her, you know the rules, as long as you clean it up as it was when you started, I will be okay. And I have to just remember that she will – and she's very good about doing that sort of stuff. So it's about, I guess, allowing them to do that. So I guess moving more into some home-focused sort of things. I really like some of the tips you gave for the part-time work, because when you're adding something new in, you can't expect to keep everything at the same level. So I think that whole idea of bringing your expectations down is great. And in terms of some of the basics, so things like meals and stuff, do you outsource any of that, or do you do meal prep on the weekends, or do you just go by the flow on the weekdays?
Oh, I have to say, meals is the biggest sticking point in our household. We have tried so many different things. I just approach mealtime now with trepidation, and I hate cooking. I hate cooking now. My children have killed my love of cooking. My daughter's quite fussy. My toddler just copies. If she rejects something, like, he rejects it as well. So we've tried a few different things here. My husband is an awesome cook. We have tried meal planning, and it will be fine for like the first couple of days, but then he'll go rogue and just make something with random ingredients, so the whole system falls over. I tried some of those services where they send you the food and they send you the recipes, and then my kids won't eat anything. So yeah, this is very much a work in progress for us. I do batch cooking. They love sausage rolls. They love spaghetti bolognese. So I make big things of them and freeze them. I bake. They always eat that. And dinner time, you know, sometimes I'll cook something that's just a kid's dinner, and then I'll cook our dinner after, or my husband will cook our dinner after. But yeah, this is not something where we are any kind of example or I have any advice.
I think families love hearing that other people have that same challenge, though, because I think that 5 and 3-year-old, they can be so incredibly fussy. But I think within that, though, there is some really solid tips. Like, I think batch cooking is great. If there is a few – people often feel that they need to offer a huge amount of variety for kids. If it's a good meal that's going to give them what they need and it's got the nutrition in there and they're going to eat it, if they eat it every once a week, I'm all for that when they're little, because they will eventually expand their repertoire and you can add other stuff in. But it makes – you know, mealtime shouldn't be a massive stress, so that really works well. I like the idea that you sort of keep mixing it up and keep trying, and eventually you'll find something that works, because it doesn't always do that. So it sounds like you might have sorted out some ways to work with your partner. He obviously does some of the stuff with the kids with school. Does he help around the house in terms of housework as well?
So this was another friction point for us. I just got to clean up, because I think you had something recently where you're talking about the Pareto principle, and like 80% of issues will be about 20% of things.
Yeah.
And cleaning and household stuff was one of them. So we've got a cleaner there. He's incredibly hands-on with the kids. So he's always doing stuff, but not on a particularly sort of regular basis. My daughter and son, they actually love vacuuming. So they'll vacuum up their little messes. They'll clear their plates after meals, and at the end of the day we do like what we call a room rescue, where we tidy up rooms, and I might put on the tidy up song. I don't know if others have encountered that song, but at daycare they play this special song with special music when they have to tidy up, and I found it on YouTube, and now I play it and the kids have this Pavlovian response and just start tidying up. It's fantastic.
I will check that out and put that in the show notes for people. But I think probably the most important thing there is that you do have that sort of little solid routine for them. I love that it's called a room rescue. I think that's a great thing. And I think you actually are, I guess, for someone who has kids at the older end, the work you're putting in now with those jobs will really pay dividends, because you can grow on what they're doing each year and get them helping, because, you know, it's like anything with kids, it becomes a habit and routine. And if it's always been part of their life, it's not such an adjustment. But if all of a sudden, at the time that they're 13, if you want them to start doing more around the house, good luck to you, because it's very hard when it gets
there. I thought your blog was very helpful for that. Like, that was a bit of an aha moment for me. Just to see at what age you actually started some of those chores for your children, because you kind of baby your kids a lot more than they need. And especially when my daughter started prep, and you see what the teacher asks of them and what they're capable of, and you think, well, yes, you can take your own clothes to the dirty laundry hamper and you can feed the cat in the morning, and they like that bit of responsibility.
Absolutely. I will put a link in the show notes to that the post that you mentioned. And again, I learnt that from the Montessori teacher, and she said, let kids do what they're capable of. And they are capable of so many things. And it often might take a little bit longer, and it becomes that sitting on your hand things again. If they're there trying to, you know, feed the cat and struggling with the feet, putting it into the dish and that sort of stuff, if you just let them struggle with it, they'll get there in the end. And sometimes they have to struggle a bit to get that success. So I think it's a really good thing. I'll move on now to the quick rapid fire questions we do at the end, and I ask all my lovely guests. So what would you say is the book that's had the biggest influence on your life as a parent? And it doesn't have to be a parenting book.
So I found this book, Everyday Blessings, The Inner Work of Mindful Parenting by Myla and John Kabat-Zinn. And it's all about cultivating emotional intelligence to deal with parenthood.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I found it really sort of genuine and real and candid. And it was very much about how to develop those sort of inner resources to cope with the demands of parenting, because you know, parenting small children, it's just, it's such a period of intense giving. And I found I'm a pretty impatient person. And I found I was just so often feeling frustrated or resentful or exhausted or confined. And this book really helped shift my attitude about the sort of the slog of parenting.
Yeah.
And just sort of help find some harmony there. And I remember watching Downton Abbey with my husband and, you know, the dowager, the old dowager who just comes out with those pithy, witty little comments. And someone was saying, oh, you know, have you been a very involved parent? I imagine that the kids are just wheeled out by the nannies and governesses and they're all just beautiful and you just see them once, you know, an hour after dinner. And she says, yes, but it was an hour every day. And that's how I felt. It's like, this is just so relentless. So I thought this book was beautiful in just helping you become a bit more emotionally intelligent about dealing with small children and dealing with parenting.
No, I could see exactly how that would work. It sounds like a great suggestion. Thank you, Mia. And what item have you bought recently that's helped make family life easier for you?
Well, this is going to sound really weird, but I got a stick vacuum cleaner the other week and I am loving it. I've never seen one before. Like, I have this old vacuum that I've had for like 20 years. I used to never get out because I couldn't be bothered dragging it around the house. And these stick vacuums, it's just like the stick part. They're cordless, so there's no tube and there's no motor dragging on the floor. And you kind of just use it like a broom, so you can kind of come and zap little messes under the dining table or in the kitchen, and you can take it apart and use it in the car to get all the crap out of the car. And my kids love using it. So it's like bonus, bonus, bonus.
My sister has one, and when we go and visit her, my kids love using hers too, so I can see how that would work.
Yeah. I never thought I'd feel passionate about a vacuum cleaner, but, you know.
Oh, I love my vacuum cleaner. It's amazing. Anything that actually helps you, I think you just instantly have a great attraction to. What advice would you give to a new mum? And it doesn't have to relate to babies, but something you've learned that's been a game changer in your journey as a parent.
Oh, this is tricky. It's, I don't know, there's so many little moments that you have, get perspective on things. Anything that can help you get perspective on the fact that doing whatever works for you is useful, I recommend that new parents go and see that film Babies. Did you ever see that there was a French documentary called Babies?
No, I didn't.
And it follows, it's like Baraka or Koina Kwatsi. There's no like dialogue, it's just watching images. And they follow these four babies through the first year of their life. One's in Tokyo, one's in San Francisco, there's one in Mongolia and another in Namibia in Africa. And you just see these, you know, healthy, happy babies being raised in totally different cultures and communities and different styles. And you just, it just made me relax and I was so relieved. And I just had that penny drop moment where you just got to do what makes sense for you and your baby and your family and not think that there's a right way of doing anything or a best way necessarily. It gave me instant perspective. So I thoroughly recommend seeing that film.
Oh, I'm going to check
and
that
just,
out.
Yeah, it's really sweet. And it just also sort of that idea that babies aren't babies for very long and you just got to stop and smell the roses instead of worrying if you're gardening the right way. To mangle a metaphor, but, you know, it's just stop worrying.
No, I think that's really beautiful. And I guess I do really just wholeheartedly endorse that babies aren't babies for very long. And I know sometimes when you're there and they're not sleeping or when you have not a moment to yourself, it can seem quite torturous, but it is really quite amazing and it is very short. And that whole perspective thing, like I think that documentary would show that, you know, all those four babies survived and probably thriving beautifully under such different circumstances. I think we can worry so much about all the tiny mistakes that we made and berate ourselves for it.
Yeah.
So the idea of perspectives is beautiful. Thank you so much for your sharings, Mia. It's just been delightful. I love the, I guess creativity has been a focus in my goal this year. So I've you know, really personally resonated with a lot of what you're saying. And I love that idea about, you know, redesigning your life, because we do need to, you know, you'll get out what you put in, and sometimes you've got to put in the hard yards to get back what you want. So thank you so much for sharing your wisdom, and appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to This Family Life. If you've picked up a tip or two along the way in listening to the show, we'd really love it if you would leave us a review on iTunes. Leaving a review on iTunes does help other families find us, and hopefully that'll help them find tips that can help them organise the chaos of family life too. If you'd like to get in touch, you can do so by going to planningwithkids.com/podcast, and you'll find all my contact details there. Thanks again.
Jackrabbit FM.
For your ears.
Who is that? Hi, Puck Pass.